Welcome to the Launch University Podcast, turning good intentions into reality in your career, business, and life.
So welcome to Launch University Podcast. I'm really, really excited today because I've got Brad Lominick with us today. And if you don't know Brad, you're about to be wowed by lots of experiences
easy
he's
now.
Had.
I know, easy.
Okay. I'm trying to build you up, man. Brad, I got to know Brad quite honestly years ago. He doesn't remember this, but I remember this. But Brad was responsible for essentially a part of the team that started Catalyst, and it was the vision of him and a few other folks that actually started this and got it off the ground. And I was a participant, one of many, about 10,000. And I remember one day bumping into you, running into you outside of Catalyst. You don't remember this, but I was like, that's the guy that started this whole thing. So I'm kind of excited that we've kind of got this ongoing friendship, and you're helping me think through some things, and I genuinely appreciate that. But I think what would be fun today is to share with other launchers out there some of the experiences that you've had, some of the life lessons you've learned along the way in launching multiple things, not only Catalyst, but LeaderCast. You've recently come out with a book. You're helping other leaders launch things. And in this world of launchers, I mean, most of us are always trying to launch an idea, a product, something in life. And oftentimes we come to these gaps of experience or knowledge that we just don't have. And launching a university is really about bridging those gaps for people. And so thanks for being here today, Brad. I really appreciate it. Thanks for making the time.
No, I love
and
it.
We'll just jump right in.
Let's do it.
We're just going to be living life together here, having a conversation. And I've got all kinds of questions. So
let's go.
Here we go. All right. First question. Take us back to when Catalyst, this huge event, this is essentially a leadership conference, and how did the vision get started, and how do you even begin to launch something of that magnitude? It starts as an idea, but take us through from idea to conception. How do you do that?
Yeah. Well, full disclosure, the early days and the original meetings, I was not part of. Gabe Lyons, who now runs Q Conference and all of what Q's doing. Gabe was part of that. He was working with John Maxwell. John Maxwell was there
in
the room.
One of the largest leadership gurus out there,
yeah,
right?
Andy Stanley was part of that initial conversation. Reggie Joyner was there. Lanny Donahoe and a few others. I was an outside consultant brought in to help develop the business plans of many of John Maxwell's brands. And at that time, we had a bunch of different brands that were doing events and conferences in different segments of the leadership space. And so I was a knucklehead in my 20s in Fayetteville, Arkansas, that was brought in to help sort of navigate the strategy side and to think about the marketing plan. And so that's the early days. We quickly got involved in a lot of the planning. And here's a couple of things to your question of what I saw, what I learned. The original idea was never, Shane, it was never we wanted to build this massive movement. You know, the original idea was to John Maxwell, who was the owner and the curator and the godfather and the leadership legend. It was a bunch of younger leaders saying to John, hey, what if we got our friends together and we did something that we felt like was targeted to us? And
folks in their 20s and 30s, younger leaders,
because we love what you're doing and we love serving you. We love being a part of what is happening with the leaders that you're getting in the room. But our friends aren't necessarily going to come to a leadership conference that you're putting on. So what if we created something that would attract us and our friends? With a real sense.
How did you get to that point where you were able to tell John Maxwell, okay, we wouldn't necessarily come to your event because it's maybe not as cool as it needs to be.
Right.
We got to make a cool event with your content.
And it wasn't
content.
Cool. It wasn't cool. That was, the cool factor was not the issue. It was that we wanted to target and really go after the next generation.
Next generation.
Now, here's
leader.
What. Here's the value of John's legacy and his leadership and his ability to see his role is that all of a sudden for him the light bulb went on of, wow, I can actually impact the next generation of leaders by allowing me to be the legacy provider and allow these young cats who are on my team to actually do all the work to attract their friends. So he was already thinking, like, this is the way I pass on all the things I've learned to the next generation is by allowing those who are in the next generation to actually put the next generation event on.
Well, I think let's hit the pause here because I think there's a huge life lesson in that, leadership lesson, and that is you look at a guy like John Maxwell, and he's looking at a target audience that he wants to reach with content. And so the best way to do that is to surround yourself with the audience that you're trying to reach.
You got it.
Because they're going to think like the audience you ultimately want to reach.
Absolutely.
And that's where you came in.
How many times have we, all of us listening, the Launch University community, how many times have you walked into an environment that was targeted towards a certain audience, but you walked in and you looked around and said, they missed it. They actually targeted the audience they are, compared to targeting the audience they were trying to connect to. And, you know, that's true in any environment, any industry, church, nonprofit, business, doesn't matter. Is if you want to connect with the audience you're trying to connect to, you have to let that audience actually build the product or build the experience.
It happens every time I design a family vacation.
You got it, man.
Because dad has a vision of what it's going to look like. And if I would have just involved my kids, it would actually be a much better experience because they know exactly what they're trying to get.
Yes. Yeah. Don't let the old guys put on the Next Generation Leadership Conference. And it doesn't mean you're old means you're out of the game.
Okay, we're less than 5 minutes in. Leadership lesson number one, don't let the old guys design the conference, right? That's exactly right.
Yeah, and again, doesn't mean that old guys don't have anything to offer.
Yeah.
But you know your role when it comes to then, like, putting the team together. And a lot of us, when we get older, me included now, like, I'm the old guy sitting around the table now.
Well, I would even argue, you know, let's use that definition widely. I mean, if you're 28 and you're designing a product for 16-year-olds, you're old.
Exactly.
Right? Get the 16-year-olds around. If you're designing a product that's designed for teenagers, get teenagers around you to help give you some insight into what it is your target audience wants.
Because at the end of the day, if they don't believe in the product, as the curators, the stewards, the owners, the builders of that product, then you already have lost. Like, you're already trying to create something that the audience you're trying to connect to doesn't even believe in. And we just see this all the time. So that was a huge thing that I saw in Maxwell that I loved as a lesson, was that he was allowing us, a bunch of young knucklehead, don't know what we're doing, 25, 26, 27 years old, going, this is your opportunity, guys, to take something and build it. He gave us freedom. He gave us a lot of room. To either, like, so build something or hang ourselves.
Give us a sense of, okay, a couple examples of, like, when you say he gave you, you know, long enough rope to get out there and try some creative things, give us, for those who have never experienced Catalyst or a leadership conference like that, and you're looking at this target audience of 20s to 30s, what were some of the things you guys were able to do?
Well, the first thing was that the initial year or two, the first couple of years, the marketing was really, really almost cynical, but very intentional towards, hey, if you're over 40, we love you, but we don't want you here.
I mean, and I still came.
It was that, exactly. it was that, like, in your face of, this is for 20 and 30 something.
So I knew walking in, if I was 40 or older, I knew walking in, this was an event that was going to be catered to that 20 and 30 year old crowd.
If you were 40 or over, the first couple of years at Catalyst, you got carted at the door. So it was all based on, you know, how old do you look? But that idea that, wait, like, oh, I'm going to get carted at the door? And it happened. And all of a sudden, like, the 47-year-old's going, wait a second, this is not for me. Now all the 20 and 30-somethings are showing up singing hallelujah because finally there's something that the marketing, the story that was being built was actually being paid off once I showed up. Because, again, I've gone to a lot of events where it was Next Generation Conference and there's like me and a bunch of 50-year-olds. So we wanted to really prove that to be true, and John gave us incredible, like, freedom and flexibility to tell that marketing story. That was a big one. The other one was that the experience would be as much a part of the overall production, program, event as content would. And it wasn't that was new, but there weren't many conferences that were creating an experience that combined all of the senses. It created moments for laughter, created moments for not taking ourselves too seriously. It actually allowed us to make fun of, in the right way, to make fun of speakers or talent And not because we wanted to, like, pull them down, but because we it was so important for us to, like, prove that they were real. Because authenticity, we knew this would be true. Authenticity was going to be the driving force of the vibe of a next generation type of gathering. Because everybody in the room was looking around going, do I believe this? Do I believe this?
They came in very skeptical,
I would
imagine.
They came in skeptical.
Right.
They came in thinking, I like that I'm seeing a bunch of other young 20-somethings here, but is it still believable? Is it still true? And so every time we had to create something, we had to think differently towards a new generation. And this, again, this was a lesson for us, which John was so good about, was that he allowed us to create something that connected to our target. Like, it wasn't just going to connect to him as the customer, as the owner.
I remember, it seems like I can't remember what year it was, but there was even a moment where you kind of made light or fun of literally John Maxwell.
Absolutely. First year.
Yeah, first year. Yeah,
first
I was like, he's older, he's an older leader, and you kind of made fun or light of that. So as an example of, hey, we're going to get real with you.
Yes. And it wasn't to put him down. It was simply to say, we're all on the same page here, guys.
Well, and the fact that he laughed about it was confirmation that this is what he wanted to do.
Yes.
Right? He wanted to reach that next generation.
Yeah.
So that's a great example.
We looked at all the experience in the program in such a different new mindset, but also new lenses. So we weren't just trying to look at other events that were in our space. We were watching what all the different things were doing, all the different events were doing, whether it was in culture, whether it was in entertainment, whether it was in the leadership space. We wanted to sort of bring the best of the best. Here's the other thing is we decided that we wanted to make sure we were pulling people out of their comfort zone. And a lot of times conferences are meant to basically echo everything that the tribe's already saying. And we wanted to get people there, leaders, for them at some point during 2 days, 2.5 days, where they were uncomfortable, where they were going, I don't even agree with that person, but they're making me think. And if we could pull the idea that, okay, for 20 minutes, you might be out of the fishbowl and you might be struggling to breathe. Okay, 20 minutes is over, put them back in the fishbowl. Now they're back to their comfort zone. But you had to stretch people because the only way one of the ways you learn best is when you're stretched, when you're uncomfortable, when you're like taken out of your norm. And so we felt like we had to do that with moments, with emotional connections, with speakers or talent or voices that we may not agree with, but we could learn from. And so those are
I think there's another lesson in there is I think about, you know, launchers that we've been introduced to and we have conversations with. I often think in many ways, they underappreciate what happens when you create tension for the customer. It's like when you create tension, when you help that customer realize that's a problem that I need to solve and I don't have a solution, and that's when you come in with the solution. And that's essentially what you did at Catalyst. You put people out of the fishbowl, you created tension, you made me squirm a little bit, and then you said, here's a leadership principle or here's an idea for you to take home. I actually think that is a really good principle for launchers that are launching ideas, products, whatever that is, to create tension, to create that moment where I am a little comfortable as the uncomfortable as the customer,
yeah,
and now I've got the solution, and here's what it is.
Yeah. We actually did a – I don't know if you remember, but we did a theme one of the years. I think it was 2009 or 2010, and it was the tension is good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And Reggie Joyner, to his credit, he was the one that really came up with that in a concept brainstorming meeting for a theme. But I love that theme, which, you know, most teams, most organizations, most people in general think that tension is negative. It's pejorative. It's something I stay away from. I got to avoid it at all costs. Like, no, the right tension actually makes things better. It stretches you. You know, it makes you think outside the box. Out of those places of tension is where change happens. And where change happens, then growth happens. And you stumble onto new things, you know. So I totally agree. Like, tension is something that we always were trying to push into a programmatic element,
mm-hmm,
in a way that, again, it wasn't forced, because forced tension feels disingenuous. It
mm-hmm
feels inauthentic. But appropriate tension, like real tension, genuine tension, will many times like cause things to happen, conversations to occur that may have not occurred. And what we all want when we show up at a conference is we want to feel like there was a change that happened in us as well as the people around us. So we were just trying to spur things on many times compared to like what's happening in the moment.
Yeah, you know, as I recall, we recently bought a car, went to go buy a car for our son, and there was one salesman that created tension, all right, but it was a sales job. It was like, you've got to have this car, you deserve to have this car, and it just wasn't the right, it wasn't genuine, versus really asking the second guy, which you ended up buying a car from, was more about, so why do you want a car in the first place?
Right.
What kind of car are you looking for? If you could have a dream car, what would it be? And he asked our son all these great engaging questions so much so by the end of the conversation, he created the appropriate kind of tension for Aaron to go, you know what, I really want a car and I really want to buy it from you. You know, that was what was so valuable about that conversation. So I think what you guys did which I think is incredible, with 10,000 people in the audience, is you created the appropriate amount of tension to be able to answer or take them to the next level.
Yeah. It's intentional great. Is from the same root, right?
As interesting.
Tension.
Yeah.
Intention and intentional are positive. It's something where I have, you know, this outlook, or I'm focused, I'm strategic about what I want to accomplish. And those actually work hand in hand because they're from the same root. But many times we think tension is something to be avoided. And I would say,
Get people in tension so they can be intentional about that next step, or so that you can be intentional about leading them to that next area.
Here's something else, and we can move on, but that I think is really helpful for those of us launching, whether you're launching an idea or you're launching a new organization or product. And this is something we learned from launching Catalyst, is we brought in lots of people from the outside who really, really both they questioned the things we were doing, as well as they challenged us on the way we were doing it. And, you know, after the first couple of years, we could have looked around and thought, hey, we're pretty good at this. But we were constantly raising the bar of who we were asking to be part of the conversation. And, you know, a lot of these people, we didn't have any business even sitting in the same room with. They were honored by us asking them. But when they showed up, we would say to them, listen, you have permission, full permission to blow this thing up and actually like speak truth at every level into what we're doing. And they would. And then we would look around the room and go, oh my gosh, like they just pretty much dismantled everything we built. But that was so helpful for us because we were constantly like challenging ourselves to go to the next level. And many times when we start something, if we have a little bit of success, then all of a sudden you know, we think, oh, I'm the man or I'm the woman, and so I know exactly what I'm supposed to do.
Let's take that. If you're a launcher and you're listening to this, one of the things it reminds me of is the design thinking process. It's like, okay, and here's what happens in any launch. You get through, you understand, you're trying to figure out the problem you're trying to solve, you imagine some ideas, you prototype those, you validate it, and then you launch. And here's the biggest mistake launchers make. Once they launch, they never go back to understanding really what they're trying to do.
Right.
And so that keeps you from reiterating and getting better. And what I hear you saying is, hey, we launched, we were actually successful 4 or 5 years, you're blowing up attendance, you're selling it out, and you could have said, we got it, we got this figured out. But what I heard you say is bring in people, outside people, to go, okay, if we were to blow this up and you have permission to, what might that look like? That gets you ultimately back into the cycle where you're going, okay, what's the problem we're trying to solve again? And reimagining some new ideas and prototyping those to ultimately get to even a better outcome.
Yes, and that had to start with me. I mean, it had to start with whoever is the, you know, the person in charge.
You got to be willing and vulnerable to say, okay, it's good, but we're going to force ourselves to come back here. The leader has to do that, is what
yes.
I hear you saying.
Yeah, because there's, you know, once you have a team of a few people, then it's okay if you criticize Johnny's idea or his idea for the opener. Oh, it's really not that good. He's just an intern, or he just started 6 months ago.
Give him some grace.
When you start blowing up my idea,
right?
Am I a confident enough leader to allow somebody to come in and potentially not put me in my place, but to speak truth and to challenge the process constantly and say, hey, do you want me to make it better, or do you just want me to please you? Did you just bring me in just to like validate all the things you're doing that you think are the right ideas? And because most of my ideas, if I was honest over the years, 95% of my ideas were awful. They really were. Like, and that's probably true for a lot of us. But once a bad idea, and this is something that Jeff Schinneberger, who I know you've had on, like Jeff was so good about this, and he helped me, he coached me through this of okay, how do we build on even potentially bad ideas at the beginning that end up turning into a good idea, and then they turn into a better idea, and then they turn into the best idea. And a lot of times the things that we thought were really not that great, if we let it stew and let it permeate and let it incubate, then over time it would turn into some of the best things we ever did at Catalyst. But it had to come from lots of different people. And so many of us who are entrepreneurs, type A's, you know, because I'm the poster boy, is if I have the best ideas in the room, we've heard this so many times, then man, we're in trouble.
Well, and there's another principle in there, and I heard this quote just a couple weeks ago, and it's like when you're out of ideas and you find yourself unmotivated, you've become the average of the top five people that you're hanging out with.
Hello.
So what you did was you kept inviting new people into the conversation so that you could stay, one, motivated, two, really challenged and more creative. And to your point, you didn't come up with most of these ideas. It was the culmination of a lot of folks speaking into that that ultimately led to the best ideas.
Yes. And the one of the great lessons I learned, too, was that when I invite people in to the conversation, to a brainstorming meeting, to a, hey, I'd love to sit down with you for an hour and hear all of your ideas, I don't care what level they're at, whether they're like the design person for the Grammys or they're like some 22-year-old, I'm honoring them. As soon as I ask them to be part of the process, I'm giving them honor. And most people who are launching something, you think, I don't have any budget, I have no resources, yeah. I have no team. And I'm telling you, if you'll, like, you honor people when you ask them to help you. So what's the worst they can say?
Well, it's so fascinating. I always tell people, you know, there's really two great leadership questions. The first one is, will you help me? And 99% of the time, the answer is always, sure,
right.
I'll help you.
Yeah.
And the second one is, how can I help you? And that comes at the end. After somebody's helped you, how can you help them? And I think to that point, asking people, will you help me? So many people feel honored if you'd ask and humble yourself to go, I really want your input. I really want your feedback. Help me with this idea. I'm struggling. And oftentimes, we talked about this at the top of the podcast. It's like, as launchers, oftentimes we have these gaps. And it is the who that can help you bridge that gap. So invite people into that conversation. And you did exactly that through all those years with Catalyst. And it's still going to this day. And it continues to grow and continues to be one of the most premier leadership conferences for that next generation. So congrats.
Well, awesome. Once you launch it, the thing I learned too was that once it starts to build and it starts to grow and it starts to get a reputation and it starts to have this following and it starts to become a movement, your job as the founder, builder, curator, whatever, is to slowly get yourself out of the way.
Mm.
Because I end up potentially killing or stifling or sucking all the oxygen out of the organism that I helped build. And this is true with so many founders. Gosh, like now a lot of my work I spend with founders trying to basically like coach them on how to release into the next life the baby that they birthed that's now a child, that's now a teenager, that's now an adult in terms of an organization or the product. And it's really hard. And
it reminds me of that concept or idea. Success is about succession.
Yes.
Like, how are you passing that on so you can get out of the way and give that to that next leader, that next generation, so that you can go on and do bigger and better things. And you've done just that. You've moved on. You worked with Catalyst and LeaderCast. You just wrote a book. I'd love to talk about that a little bit. Hungry, Humble, and Hustle, yep. H3 Leadership. Tell us a little bit about, okay, what inspired that? And then maybe we can talk about some of the principles that you've kind of learned on your journey.
Yeah. Well, that idea of be humble, stay hungry, always hustle has sort of been my leadership mantra for the last 20 years. And I didn't package it correctly when I was in my 20s, but, you know, over time it grew into this phrase that when the interns at Catalyst would show up, you know, they're 22, and they would say, Brad, okay, just boil it all down. What do I need to do while I'm here at Catalyst? How am I going to get ahead? How am I going to get the job? Or how can I build my resume? You know, it's everything they're thinking about of how do I become the leader I want that I want to follow. And it's those three things. If you'll be humble, you'll stay hungry and always hustle, then I think that's the roadmap, a really simple, memorable roadmap to the kind of leader that I think we all want to end up becoming. And, you know, here's the thing about those three. They have to work together. Because I know a lot of leaders who are incredible hustlers. They work hard. They get it done. They execute. They take things across the finish line. But everything about them is arrogant. Hmm. Everything about them is, I'm going to get mine. Everything about them is, at the end of the day, like it's all about me. I know a lot of humble leaders who understand the story's bigger than they are, who understand that, you know, they are not the center of attention, that they're gonna focus on others, but they don't do anything. So you have to have those in balance. It's like a three-legged stool that has to be correctly positioned, and the hunger is the part in the middle that connects a posture of humility and a posture of hustle.
Reminds me of Jim Collins' concept of the level five leader to some degree, the sensational desire to win combined with the humility to serve.
Yes.
And it's really the bridging of those three that make for this H3 leader or this leader that people appreciate and want to follow.
Yeah, and Pat Lencioni has a great book out that I highly recommend called Ideal Team Player. Mm. And he talks about humble, hungry, smart. You know, so very similar in terms of sort of this triple-legged stool that I think is helpful when we think about our leadership. And, you know, so if I'm living at all three of those, then I think I'm hitting on most of the cylinders of the engine of my leadership that's going to be effective. And the premise of the book is then within those buckets, those three buckets, there's 20 habits. And there's probably more than that, but from my life, I've found that there's 20 habits that if I'm working on those habits, then I will end up being an H3 leader.
So I want to encourage you to pick up Brad's book. It's awesome, and I think it's well worth kind of diving in and looking at some of these habits and principles. Okay, so for our listeners, just for today's podcast, give us, I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, but give us maybe in each one of those areas, maybe one tip to think about in regards to being hungry, humble, and hustle.
Yep.
Like, think about those three things, and then what's some advice you would give some of our listeners?
Sure. So when it comes to humility, I think the power of the most humble leaders is that they are the most self-aware. So the more self-aware you are as a leader, the more humble you become. And sometimes that doesn't compute, because you think, oh, the more self-aware I am, actually the more confident I become. Exactly. And confidence is actually humility. The opposite of humility is not arrogance, I don't think. It's actually insecurity. And a lot of us go through life and we're insecure, meaning that we don't know what our calling is. Like we don't know what the true purpose of our life is. So the more you dial in on that,
that self-awareness piece.
Self-awareness.
Yeah, it's so fascinating you said that. So Jeff Henderson, co-founder of Launch University, actually, one of his best leadership questions is, what's it like to be on the other side of me?
Yeah.
That's all about self-awareness. It's
absolutely
getting an idea of how am I coming across? What does that look like? And I hear that's what I hear you saying is that's key in regards to humility.
Yes. And that's one, I would say that's one part of it is self-awareness of what kind of leader you are, but also being totally dialed in on your sense of calling and your sense of purpose. And a lot of us, we're faking it as it relates to what's truly our purpose in life.
And that's false humility.
That's false humility, exactly. And all we're doing is we're searching for that sweet spot, that lane that we want to run in, the river we should be in. And once you find it, though, I mean, once you find that sense of calling on your life, then your ability to be humble is so easier because you know exactly what you were designed for compared to you're constantly looking for it. you're insecure, you're...
Well, and all of a sudden the realization comes that this is much bigger than me, exactly. And therefore I can't do it on my own, and that's when humility kicks in.
Yes.
That's great.
So hunger, I would say a couple things. One is curiosity. I mean, man, I want to be the most curious person in the room. And just the practical side of that is ask great questions. Don't feel like whether you're 22 or you're 62 that you need to have all the answers. You might have all the answers, but the powerful
leaders— and assume
leaders,
you don't.
Assume you don't.
Yeah.
And the powerful leaders, the ones who I respect the most, when I've been in rooms with them, it was a fight to figure out who could ask the best question. And John Featherston, who's a friend of yours, John Featherston, one of those guys for me that like is the case study of one of the great question askers of our day. And, you know, when I first started connecting with John, but this was back in like 2001, 2002, here at Chick-fil-A, I would show up and we would, like for an hour, it was who could ask the best question, who could be the most curious, who could be the most interested in the other person. And man, that is a immediate credibility gainer. Is if you're a really good question asker, you automatically like step your credibility game up significantly in the room. And especially for those of us who are walking into many rooms, this is the story of my life. Most rooms I walk into, I look around and go, I should not be here. Like if they only knew that I'm the knucklehead from, you know, small town in Oklahoma. But I learned early on that the best way for me to raise my level of influence in those rooms was just be a great question asker.
Yeah. Oh, that's great advice.
So that's a big one. On the hustle side, execution. That one is the differentiator today more than ever before, because all of us now are free agents, meaning that the hierarchy of most organizations is flattened. We're typically not in places where we're being overly managed, especially launchers. Hello. Like, you don't have a boss, most of you. Your boss,
which makes it even harder.
Your boss is
right?
You.
That's right.
So you understand this. At the core, you know that if you don't execute, you don't eat. Or if you don't execute, you don't get a paycheck. Or if you don't execute, then the business just stops. It stalls. Or it just, like, the gear shut down. But I think the people who make things happen today are by far
they
the
execute.
Most important on the team. So those would be the three, like habit-wise, be really self-aware, be really curious, and be a finisher. Just get things across the finish line, execute. As Seth Godin says, ship it. Like, get it out the door.
Okay, so here's where I'm netting out. We are close to 35 minutes. This conversation has been flying. I love this. I'm going to ask a favor. Would you be willing to come back at some point and just keep the conversation going? Because I think there's a lot more that we could learn. And what I love about you, Brad, is you're constantly in these conversations with other leaders and other launchers where you're helping them. And so you're an avid learner. I love that about you. So thanks for taking some time today to spend some time with us. And I want to encourage you. I think you have a Twitter handle.
Yeah, it's just my first and last name on all the social media outlets, website, everything is just Brad Lominick. That's Lominick.
All right. So if you want to have some fun, follow Brad. He's into a lot of great stuff. Pick up his book. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, go to the Apple Store and just give us a good rating. If you liked it, if not, give us some feedback. We'd love to hear that as well. And we sure do appreciate your time, Brad. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Launch University podcast. We hope it's helped move you from go-getter to difference maker. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and leave a review. Find more great resources at launchu.net.